As retailers continue expanding their private label assortments, many are focused on making their store brand products more sustainable. But this endeavor is not simple and requires a new way of thinking when creating new products that capture the spirit of sustainability while also being of high quality and offering a strong value to shoppers. Welcome to Store Brand Spotlight. I'm Greg Sleater, Executive Editor of Store Brands. Our guest is Christina Lampert, Director of Growth and Innovation at How Good. Christina will offer her unique insight on how retailers can support their private label development teams to formulate new products with a lower carbon footprint. Christina, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Greg. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
It's our pleasure. We're excited to talk with you. Obviously, sustainability is a constant topic of conversation in, I think, every discussion I have, regardless of what the focus is. Sustainability at some part is always part of that discussion. And it might not be the first thing we talk about, but it's still the second or third thing we do discuss as retailers grow their private label programs. So I'm excited to have you with us. Christina, as we start, can you just give us kind of an overview of How Good and what the organization does?
Yes, absolutely. So How Good is a sustainability intelligence company. And we essentially have spent the last 17 years mapping global food supply systems. So we have an in-house, very well-accredited research team who's looking at over 600 different data sources and all of these wonderful peer-reviewed studies within. And we're able to then calculate the environmental and social impacts of over 33,000 ingredients, chemicals, and packaging materials. And so we bring all of this research forward into a software platform called Lattice, which essentially enables food product developers, formulators, product designers, sustainability marketers use this data to inform their decisions, inform their sourcing, inform their procurement strategy, but also make it really easy to communicate downstream to the shopper to enable informed decision making. So yeah, we kind of work with many different companies, many different food CPGs, many different retailers on the private label products as well, and things like that. So
retailers of all shapes and sizes have spent the past couple of years developing plans and looking to become more sustainable and environmentally friendly. I'm curious to get your insight on how they're doing, and are they going to be able to meet the goals that they set a couple of years ago?
Yeah, it's a really great question. And when I often reflect on where retailers are today, I think, as with the rest of the industry, a lot of players are now really understanding the data that's helping retailers understand, okay, if we're thinking about where the majority of greenhouse gas impact comes from, it's actually not the packaging that we're using to package up our private label product. It's not necessarily the transportation. It actually has everything to do with the raw materials that we're sourcing, the ingredients that we're sourcing, the ingredients that we're choosing, the assortment of private label products that kind of roll up into those products. So I would say that I'm seeing that definitely become more prominent and kind of taken a front seat in terms of where these retailers are focusing their efforts. So they're kind of shifting away from, okay, maybe it's really good we have sustainable packaging efforts, but if we really want to move the needle in terms of environmental and social impact, we have to focus so much more upstream and we need to get really good data there. And so a lot of retailers, by way of that, are now focusing into, okay, yeah, let's start getting some impact metrics at the product level by understanding them at an ingredient level and starting from there and starting to explore, you know, can we change out this liquid egg for aquafaba, which has a far lower carbon footprint? And so those are some of the, those strategies that formulators are starting to work with today in the private label sector.
So it sounds like there's been a real evolution in the understanding or learnings of being more sustainable, where it's not just the product that sits on the shelf and how it looks or what it's packaged in, but you're really, it's a 360 degree view of, you know, how a given product or how, you know, the retailer has to source a product that really taps into sustainability. It's not just about, hey, we've changed the box kind of thing.
It's so much more. Yeah. Just to give you some quantification behind it, we know that over 70% of a food product's impact is typically derived from the land use change that's required to grow the raw materials, the origin crops. And it's also comprised of what happens during that on-farm stage. So what are all of the resources needed to grow the crop? Is there synthetic fertilizer involved, which we know the main component of that is natural gas and ammonia, for example. So yeah, all of that really adds up, and that's really where the focus is. And we know some ingredients require, far less inputs, some require far more. And then I think the other aspect that a lot of retailers are paying attention to are just like the emissions derived from processing. So we know that apples are going to have a different impact compared to apple juice concentrate, right? It's going to take more apples to produce that same functional unit of the concentrate itself. And so we're seeing formulators really pay attention to that, right? And making sure that that's well accounted for as they think through some of those more processed ingredient inclusions as well.
The answer to my next question might be a long list. So if you could give me a couple of the, I guess, the bigger points to this. But in terms of the challenges that retailers face, what are the bigger ones that they have to kind of tackle as they look to become more sustainable?
Yeah, I mean, the way that I think about this is I think that there are like internal challenges inherent to business operations and what things are being considered to make the decisions that will ultimately increase or decrease the company's scope 3 footprint. So maybe I'll start with those first. And then I certainly think that there's other challenges related to how do we communicate this to the shopper, right? So just starting from an internal perspective, if we think about the decision makers that are ultimately affecting, you know, how close a retailer is to hitting their sustainability target, it really comes down to making sure this information is in the hands of a few key teams. Number one, as we've touched on, certainly the product formulator. So at the very minimum, in addition to making sure it tastes good, making sure it meets all the thresholds for, you know, the shopper's delight, I think it's a challenge right now to get sustainability information into the hands of developers and at the very least just helping them to get literate with it and use it as considerations and seeing where there's quick wins. So that's why HowGoods platform is so easy to use regardless of, you know, what team you're on and the level of expertise that you have. So I think that that's one thing. Another challenge that I'm seeing internally with retailers specific to private label is we know that, let's say an ingredient is decided upon for a private label product. The reality is that, you know, if the ingredient is a tomato, we know that a tomato is going to have a different carbon footprint if it's sourced from Canada, where tomatoes are typically grown in greenhouses rather than soil. And so we need to take into consideration the electricity grid mix powering that greenhouse compared to if it's being grown in soil in California. And so that's where procurement teams start to come into place. So putting this data and information into the hands of procurement teams over the next few years, I think will be crucial just so they can start to build really good heuristics about their own sourcing and the suppliers that they decide to work with. So those are a couple of things I'm seeing just, internally within private label sustainability strategy. And then I would also say a lot of retailers are thinking through strategically, how do we then communicate it downstream to our shopper? And so a challenge that they're dealing with just from the comp side of it is like, all right, where is our shopper today? What do they understand? What's driving their purchasing decisions? And we have so many statistics out there about climate-friendly product purchasing behavior across the board. We know millennials are such a strong demographic to market sustainability marketed products too. But the reality is that that's going to change based on retailer by retailer. And so I think, everyone's trying to understand that from that perspective. And I'd also say another challenge is like, there's so many standards and certifications out there and sustainable packaging claims. Retailers are now just trying to figure out how do we like take all of that and unify it and standardize it into, you know, one simple standard or rating system that we can provide to our shoppers across the board so that they can make more informed decisions.
Interesting. Yeah. So a lot for retailers to consider there. And I'm curious too, the past few years, there's been a lot of focus on the sustainability plans that retailers have presented. Have we seen a noticeable impact yet, or are these efforts that are just going to take more time to have a more of a bigger impact?
Yeah, it's a great question. If we think about what is actually needed to account for, it's called like a major reduction in greenhouse gas impact, it all comes down to how is the retailer currently accounting for scope 3 value chain emissions. And what I'm seeing right now is there's a lot of retailers who are still using what we call category averages to do impact accounting. So that might mean they're using one emission factor, which would help us understand the amount of carbon dioxide equivalent emitted for a category. And so they might have, you know, an emission factor for dairy, an emission factor for fats and oils, an emission factor for beef. And they're doing that for their impact accounting, but that doesn't go specific into the products within that category. So for example, if we think about fats and oils, right, we know that palm oil is going to have a completely unique greenhouse gas impact compared to olive oil, compared to coconut oil. And so until we get to, you know, the point where retailers are having emission factors for all of those individual products underneath that category, rather than kind of just using this average, that's where we're going to see a lot of these retailers now being able to claim, hey, we actually switched, you know, coconut oil for palm oil, and we were able to reduce emissions by X or by Z. So that's kind of the nuance that we're dealing with. And I think that there's been certainly a lot of progress in general, but when it comes to actually quantifying that progress, substantiating it, and then communicating it, I would say that that's now kind of in the process. Retailers are now starting to scenario plan within categories using very specific emission factors in order to do that.
Part of the narrative, I think, too, we've heard from retailers in discussing what they're doing with sustainability is things that consumers are demanding. But I'm curious, we hear that sort of broadly, but do you have a greater sense of what consumers are demanding? And are they really willing to do their part in this effort? Because ultimately, if the retailer brings a product that's really more sustainable, the consumer still has to buy it and partake in maybe recycling the packaging or whatever their role is. So it's sort of, you know, what do the consumers want? And are they willing to play their part in this effort?
Yeah, it's a really great point. I would say, like we were talking about before, right? I think what do consumers want? That is going to differ so much based on the demographic, shopper age group, store location, state, I mean, you name it. And so I'm sure that within a retailer, right, that's going to be very interesting as it relates to each of those filters that we just talked through. What I will say is based on the literature that I've looked at and sales results and you name it, and kind of even like loyalty to a retailer, is where retailers are actually doing the screening ahead of time for the shopper. So it's not necessarily that the shopper is demanding X, Y, and Z. It's almost like they're demanding to not have to do the research when they walk into the store because they're overwhelmed as it is. And so we're seeing a lot of retailers win in this space who are screening things ahead of time on behalf of the shopper and kind of taking the onus off of the shopper. We're seeing so much traction for retailers who are doing that. So one example is, you know, I'm thinking about a few where Trader Joe's and Whole Foods, for example, they ban certain synthetic food dyes that are derived from non-renewables. So if we think about Red 40 or Yellow 5, right, these synthetic food dyes are typically derived from petroleum or coal tar in some instances. And so by making sure and doing that screening ahead of time, shoppers are now like, oh, this is wonderful. I can go into this store and I don't even have to think twice. I know that this is not on the shelves. Another example of this, of a retailer that's doing this really well is PCC Community Markets, even more so with an emphasis on sustainability. So you can easily go to their website. They educate their shoppers on ingredients that they ban from their shelves. Of course, both from processing perspective, health hazard perspective, but they also do a lot of sustainability screening as well. So really impressive there. And I just think that those are a couple of examples in terms of retailers who are winning, in terms of meeting that consumer demand for that.
Right. And you talked about, you know, retailers using their website. And we start to dig into what retailers are doing, and you talk about elimination of certain ingredients. You talk about working with farmers to make sure, you know, the workers are getting livable wages. I mean, there's a lot going on. How can retailers really communicate that to the shoppers to make them understand, you know, the efforts that they're making, the great work that we're seeing, and ultimately how that's better for not just obviously whether the workers, but how it's better for the consumer, and then help them make those choices at the shelf, if you will, of products that are really more sustainable and better for everybody.
Absolutely. Yeah, I often talk about the strategy that I formulated, which is the first educator advantage. And I think the retailers who are actually educating the shopper, exactly to your point, that hey, if you care about, you know, climate change and greenhouse gas impact, when you're thinking about food, it's actually so much more important, again, to pay attention to the ingredients, what happens during the farm stages. That's where the environmental and social impact is typically derived from. So I think that's one thing, right? The retailer's opportunity to be a first educator in that space, because what it does is it triggers the shopper to subconsciously question every other retailer who's not communicating on that impact topic that's not necessarily mainstream. And so I think that's kind of the first stage and evolution of it. And then from there, provided that, yes, you have shoppers who are interested in making more informed decisions that are in alignment with their environmental and impact and social impact values, you can then move forward with really simple, straightforward, you know, shelf level tags that help do just that. So for example, we've implemented very straightforward, very digestible climate labels that help the shopper to understand, hey, this product qualifies for How Good Climate Friendly, which means that it has a cradle to gate carbon footprint lower than 70% of all grocery products that How Good has assessed. We saw after implementing that, that product sales velocity increased by 25% just by adding climate friendly. And so we saw like immense quick shopper behavior change there. But as we think about other impact topics, right, we know that so many shoppers out there really resonate with messaging around labor risk and human rights. And so when we added, we have like a climate label for fair labor, basically just signifying to the shopper that there hasn't been any identified child labor, forced labor as part of the supply system. We saw those products increase by 45% in terms of sales over 3 weeks. And so that's what's exciting to me. I think there's definitely solutions in place to help shoppers make more informed decisions and just allow the retailer to be a first educator there.
And you know, obviously the digital aspects of our lives right now make that easy, where you don't have to put a sign necessarily at the shelf. You maybe put a QR code, you scan it with your phone, and you could get that information. I'm honestly surprised at how engaged consumers are with knowing this information. You know, you think of people, you're running into a supermarket, you want to get your food and get out. But it's fascinating to me how a growing number of consumers are really engaged in really wanting to know, you know, the sources of the products and are those people cared for, and the water usage. You mentioned the use of synthetic seeds and things like that. The consumer really is, to my surprise, caught onto this, and it's fascinating to watch them make those choices now based on that information. So I think that's a good thing.
Yeah. And I mean, something else you can think about too is like, people want to feel, they want to have those extra layers of validation for their choices. And so one thing I often do, and I don't know if this resonates with anyone, it's like if you're trying a new food, like farro, for example, oftentimes it's like you're Googling, is farro good for you? What are the health benefits of farro, right? You just want that like next layer of like, I know it is, but like, let me find out everything else that's good about it. And we do that with so much. And I think it's the same here where it's like, yeah, maybe I am shopping at a more expensive retailer, right? Relative to others. And maybe I am interested in this product and maybe I normally wouldn't spend $5 on chocolate, but like I want it, I know it tastes good. And now that I can see that it's climate friendly, it's just adding that extra layer of validation, making me feel really good about maybe spending a little bit more. And so I think that's another more qualitative side to this whole ecosystem of involving sustainability in decision making that that we're seeing. So
one of the aspects of private label, which I think is somewhat unique, is that the retailer is involved in the product development cycle from start to finish. They're just not looking to a company to say, yes, send me your chips or your cookies or whatever it is. They are involved in that process. So they can have a greater say in the sustainability aspects of it. From the supply side, are the suppliers there right now? Are they not necessarily on board, but do they have the ability to meet the needs of the retailers who are asking for, you know, a lot of new things when it comes to sustainability?
Yeah, great question. And just to confirm, do you mean the ingredient suppliers who are kind of...
Yeah, from the ingredient suppliers to the manufacturers, because, you know, there's, you know, again, there's so many elements to it when you talk about supply chain and there's so many elements of it. Yeah, but ingredient suppliers, the ultimate manufacturers, you know, all the folks that the retailers are relying on to make those products.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we're seeing variants in this space. I think we're seeing so many ingredient suppliers who are stepping up. They know that this information is being asked for from their own buyers, exactly what you were just alluding to. And they're also catching on to the fact that if they want to be deemed as, yeah, high ranking, you know, excellence in sustainability, then they do at the very minimum need to have what we call product level emission factor for the ingredient that they are supplying to their buyer. And that helps position themselves really well for the long term, because that kind of like mitigates the risk of their buyer estimating a carbon footprint on behalf of them without their information. And so I think a lot of these suppliers are like, yeah, we need to do this. We need to make sure the information is correct so that we can provide this to them and they can use that in their scenario modeling later down the line as they're thinking about their own scope 3 value chain emission reduction. And then on the other side of it, you know, there's some, I would say, way more upstream suppliers, like, you know, maybe at the farm level, who's actually like 7 different stages, you know, before the fact when it becomes something more processed, where it just may not be as asked for. So definitely across the board there. And then when we think about the manufacturing side of things or co-man perspective, a lot of variance there as well. But I would say the more, you know, vertically integrated the processes for a product, we're seeing a lot quicker time to impact calculation and impact reliance there. A lot of ingredient suppliers are also leveraging these types of metrics in their sales collateral. So they're even using it kind of as a competitive edge within their own ecosystem for their buyers. So some movers and shakers for sure that I think we're seeing.
Regarding Giant Eagle's recent launch of their Nature's Basket program, and I think you've got some familiarity with that program, that line, for folks who don't know, it features products that are responsibly sourced and offers high quality ingredients. As we sit right now, how unique is this product offering, you know, from what you see others doing across retail?
Yeah, I think it's really a special marketing story for a couple of reasons. One, it was almost like divine intervention, where Giant Eagle has spent so much time doing really hard work to reformulate all of their products. And from what I understood was, you know, based on conversations, is it just took so much time to make sure that everything was thoughtfully formulated. And some of those values, to my knowledge, were, you know, making sure that labels were cleaned up, making sure that things were minimally processed, for example, and making sure that they were as close to, yeah, the whole raw foods that are beneficial for our health. So a lot of different themes that were worth celebrating. And so by way of that formulation and as part of their rebrand, they were essentially looking for a way to communicate this in a unified, digestible, you know, standard of some sorts to their shopper. And I think there's one thing where you can analyze this yourself on behalf of, you know, your own brand and share that message with the shopper. But I think it's even more powerful when you have a third party kind of coming in who actually does environmental and social impact analysis to kind of do that additional layer of assurance, that additional layer of assessment. And so something that we did was we assessed all of their products for environmental and social impact. And if the product, the Nature's Basket private label product, scored better than at least 75% of all products that How Good assessed just in conventional grocery, it got a How Good impact rating, which ranked from best, greater good. So yeah, the perspective of coming in to do that rating system for private label, I think was definitely unique. We have some partners who are doing it for nationally branded and private label, but this was such a special way just to kind of showcase their rebrand specifically in terms of environmental and social impact.
Clearly, other retailers are going to look at what Giant Eagle did, and it's such an expansive offering. I mean, and as you mentioned, there was a lot of time and effort that went into this. As other retailers kind of look at what they did and maybe consider doing something similar, where do they start and what do they need to consider?
There's a couple of things that I would recommend considering. I think number one is definitely understanding that it is so easy to pilot things. And so if you're a retailer and you're thinking about doing something similar or working with How Good to add climate labels to your shelves, just know that it's very simple to do. It's very quick assessment, relatively speaking. With digital technologies, it's easy to get, you know, A/B tests up and running between different stores. And so it doesn't have to be this whole, oh my gosh, we need to do it. We need to do it right the first time. Retailers can be really nimble, really quick in understanding what's going to test well and introduce incremental sales and margin results as part of any sort of this initiative. So I would say that that's one thing. The second thing after that, and kind of thinking through a strategy there, at least to pilot something, is then deciding, is this something I want to leverage for elevating my private label? Or is it something that I want to leverage in terms of a store standard overall, which may be inclusive of private label and nationally branded products too. So we can certainly help you think through that just based on our work at How Good. We've definitely done our fair share of both, and I think that there's pros and cons to both of those scenarios. And then the other piece of advice is just thinking through and starting to investigate, like, hey, yeah, what data do I have on products? Do I have ingredient lists? Because that's really kind of all you need at a bare minimum, or even a UPC code to get started in terms of assessing products. Then you can get a baseline. Then you can understand how it ranks. And you might say, oh my gosh, 80% of our products are scoring. Let's get this on the shelves immediately, or at least start talking about it in our impact report. So those are just a couple of themes coming to mind.
When we started the conversation, we talked about that sustainability has become part of the conversation right now. And I'm guessing in most, if not all, meetings that retailers are having, it's on the agenda. And it's just part of doing business right now. As you kind of look forward, where do you see the topic going and how retailers continue working sustainability into their daily operations, from putting product on the shelves to just, you know, running their business?
Yeah. So looking forward to the future, my prediction is that, right, a lot of these retailers are in the midst of their scope 3 analysis, and they're understanding, yes, okay, majority of our impact is coming from the ingredients that we source for our private label line, but it's also, of course, coming from the impacts on the products that we're deciding to source from a nationally branded side of things. And so what this means moving forward is that at some point, it is in the interest of the retailer to meet their sustainability goals to start making sure that category buyers are literate in this information from a nationally branded side of it. So if there's a buyer, for example, that's like sourcing all of the deli meats, if there's a buyer sourcing all of the dairy products, I mean, you name it, having some sort of report, which is what we're working on at How Good, to say, hey, just to let you know, over the last course of the year, these are the products that introduced the highest amount of greenhouse gas impact. Here's the sales results and cross-reference both of those things. How can we then use this data to inform your category buying decisions moving forward, and maybe set thresholds for the percent that has to be low carbon or climate friendly products, which also sell more in the space. And so I think there's going to be this nice congruent flow moving forward, just in terms of buying decisions, which ultimately will influence the scope three target reduction. I think there's another opportunity for, again, procurement and private label sourcing. So we're seeing a lot of procurement professionals within private label, within retail, who are saying, okay, I am now going to go into all of my supplier decision-making meetings, whatever that looks like, with impact metrics next to me and start working with suppliers in terms of where do we need to go for scope three reduction, or things like that. So yeah, those are just a couple of my predictions in terms of where we need to focus, where things will be focused on to make the most momentum happen in terms of GHG impact reduction.